ZipRecruiter is a proud sponsor of Fantasy Focus Baseball. Are you hiring? Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. Well, ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you are looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter does not stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, listeners to this Fantasy Focus Baseball can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel, because ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Oh my goodness, the monsters in the book. I'm so impressed.
You're a pretty good Grover, AJ. We're going to make this a regular thing.
We got to clip that for every time we talk about monsters.
I like it.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, June 7, 2018. Lots to discuss on this packed show. I am Eric. Joining us today is our colleague, pal, and points league expert, AJ Mass. Also, we have Fantasy Sports Research Associate Kyle Soppy. Editorial watchdog Leo Howell. They're not for long. He's headed on some month-long vacation. And producer Anthony Calatayud. AJ, how are you this fine day? I think this is our first show of the year, just you and me, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know if that's good or bad, but at least there'll be a lot less tunage we have to shell out some residual royalty fees for.
Well, Tristan just, you know, is such a Cal Ripken type, Cal Ripken Jr. type, but he's away actually watching baseball in a faraway land. We'll get that story from him next week.
Sure, I'll be your Ryan Miner. Sure, why not?
And I think we can all be like Cal Ripken Jr. for presented with the opportunity in terms of durability. I don't have much power. We have a trade. We have injuries. We've got performances, good and bad. Here's the buzz. What should we start with today? Because there's a lot of stories here. So, AJ, I'm going to put the onus on you. We have a trade, but the player involved. We have injuries, of course. And we've got performances good and bad. So what jumps out to you, either from the last week or from last night, that you would like to discuss?
Oh, wow. Thanks a lot. Put it all on me. I guess, you know, for me, being a Mets fan and watching the Mets, I'd rather not talk about anything involved with New York's scoring outage there, although it was nice to see Brad Brack get another save. So there's at least some good news that's non-Mets related there. I guess we can talk all things Tampa Bay.
All things Tampa Bay.
Ooh,
okay,
that sounds
for Leo.
Interesting, yeah.
Because,
okay.
Yeah, send him off on a positive note.
So it's kind of like a trade, Leo. You were like, who was the Lou Gehrig guy who'd never played again? Jake Bowers gets promoted, and Leo goes away. Is that something that's happening here?
Yeah, well, I'm heading to Durham fill his spot in the lineup.
Can you play first base? Okay. Well, Leo, let's ask you, Jake Bowers. And then we'll get AJ's thoughts here on rookies and what to do in points leagues and standard ones. But Jake Bowers, from what you've seen in the minor leagues, not a ton of power, but that's totally irrelevant because it's a new baseball in the major leagues. Will the Rays play him regularly at first base or left field? Where will he hit in the lineup, do you think? Will he be productive? Will we be still talking about Jake Bowers when you come back from your vacation?
I certainly hope so. He's kind of been a guy that, as we've talked about, like with the way that power can just sort of break out when you enter the big leagues, he seems like such a prime candidate for that because he does, you know, make a good contact. Like Fangraphs gives him a decent power score, and he's just that sort of guy that you could just see, like, Tampa's not a great park for it, obviously, but, you know, even just in road games in the AL East, there's some favorable hitting situations. I'd really like to see him thrive. He's been a guy we've been tracking for a while. He's a guy that if it wasn't the Rays, he probably would have got a shot earlier. But I mean, yeah, you've got the rotating cast of Gomez, Field, Smith in the outfield, and it feels like he can upgrade on any of those. Like Gomez has been so inconsistent with the bat that you'd have to imagine that that's a guy they're looking to, you know, potentially shift out of the lineup more often. And Bowers has every chance to really earn that spot.
AJ, from a points league perspective, do you invest in rookies. This depends who the rookies are, pitchers versus hitters. When the guy comes up and he doesn't have a power profile, does that affect your interest?
Well, you know, if there's two types of power profiles, and I think Bowers falls into the category where, no, perhaps the home runs haven't been there, but the doubles certainly have. And I think, you know, it's total bases. I don't care about home runs. I care about total bases. So for me, he's definitely someone I'm intrigued about, whether they decide to put him at first base and maybe try and trade Brad Miller while he's being a little bit better of late, get him some time there. I think definitely there's playing time for him. They would not bring him up if they weren't committed to play him because there's no reason to otherwise. So I think he'll get the playing time, and I like the fact that if there is something to this new baseball in the majors, a lot of those doubles that he's been hitting down in AAA will become home runs in the bigs, you would presume. Good for Brodo in that sense, but in points leagues, I don't care. It's still 2 points every double. You know, it's still very beneficial.
Let me get your take, AJ, on what that means, these rookies coming up. Because while we have Ozzie Albies and Austin Meadows coming up and hitting for power, it's not every rookie. Scott Kingery isn't doing it. So how are you viewing this, the acknowledgement from baseball that it is actually a different baseball? It bothers me to no end that it's a different baseball in the minors and the majors. But when you're trying to evaluate talent and project ahead, have you thought about the difference in the baseball and how it affects? It's not only affecting hitters because it's a different baseball. I think it's making pitchers have blisters, and we'll get to the blisters for a very profile guy very soon.
Yeah, I can't rest necessarily. You know, I don't watch the games in the minors because I'm spending all my time watching the major league games. So I don't know. I haven't done the experiment of watching a guy at the AAA level and then watching him in his first few at-bats at the big league level for me personally to see the difference in how they make contact with the ball and what it actually does. I'll have to rely on other people for that. But in terms of a fantasy manager who might not have that as well, I think you look at opportunity and assume that they're equal, and if anything, it'll be a better use of the you know, trajectory and launch angle and all that stuff coming off the bat here in the majors. They got to make contact. And if there's someone who makes contact, I don't think that I care about what the baseball is versus someone who maybe like, you know, 30% strikeout rate in the minor leagues. That's someone I'm going to worry about coming to majors regardless of what the ball looks like.
Rays lost Chris Archer to the disabled list with a left abdominal strain. We do not know when he will return to the mound. We have a question here on Twitter from Joe. Archer seemed to be figuring things out over his past four starts. Assuming he doesn't miss major time, do you think he's back to a reliable option after struggling for the first month plus of this season? Chris Archer was a guy we, in standard roto leagues, well, standard is points now, but in a roto league, I was ranking him in the top 20 for sure because of the many strikeouts, borderline top 10. Did you differ on that in points leagues? And how do you evaluate Archer after his rough start? Gives up a lot of home runs, but still has a lot of strikeouts. Not as many strikeouts, but still plenty of them.
Yeah, well, you know, it's that combination. It's been killing him this season is that he's not striking out as many hitters, and he's walking more hitters. And that's, you know, about as deadly as you can get in points leagues, not getting as many coverage of those walks. That K to BB rate is something that I, you know, use as a mantra. If it's not looking good, you don't want anything to do with it. He's, you know, he's a 4 ERA pitcher when he is, you know, an ace. The only good thing about it is that at least he gives you 200 innings if he's healthy, and that was what was always going to bump him up into my top 25. You know, with an injury and the potential of him not reaching that 200 innings, I got to put him down to around number 30 now and see what he does when he comes back and see if there's any lingering rustiness.
Speaking of injuries, Alex Reyes of the Cardinals, through four innings this season, he is done. He is the most dropped pitcher in ESPN leagues. He's still rostered in almost 30%. Cut him. He has a torn lat muscle. Expected to miss 6 months. He had surgery. Drew Pomerantz at the DL. I've been off that bandwagon for 2 years. Andrelton Simmons on the DL, sprained an ankle on the dugout steps, like we all do. He should be back next week, so don't panic there. Carlos Martinez of the Cardinals. This is interesting to me. Comes back from the DL on Monday, on Tuesday, like everyone else, Bumgarner and DeSclafani. And it was a bad outing. He walked like four or five Marlins, and nobody should ever do that. But he also acknowledged the day after he wasn't throwing as hard as he could because he didn't want to get re-injured. Now, I can't recall seeing that before. That scares me a little bit. That tells me that Carlos Martinez is probably not 100% healthy. That's why he was walking all those Marlins. Do you have concerns about Martinez right now?
When a player admits that, it's one thing if the fans or the announcers or just people surrounding the team are like postulating it as a potential reason for a poor outing. And in general, I'm one who's going to dismiss the first game back because of perhaps rustiness. But when the player just outright says, I was kind of concerned, then I'm very concerned. I can't imagine. Usually the players lie, or at least we have this image of the major league players saying, I'm ready. Get me back in the game. And when a player's like, yeah, I probably wasn't really ready, that's alarming.
I agree. I'm going to use him in his next outing. I don't even know who it's against, but I think he's the type of – he's a top 20 pitcher, and you use him no matter what, even at Coors. But it's not at Coors. I think we'll see a different Carlos Martinez over the weekend. Shohei Ohtani left his outing on Wednesday night with a blister on his pitching hand. It was four innings. The Royals were actually like laying off the splitter. I don't know the exact number here. Maybe somebody does. But it seems to me like 2% of Ohtani's splitters are strikes. Yet everybody swings at them. The Royals were laying off a little bit like the Astros and the Red Sox did last month. Ohtani's great, okay? He is. But he's on pace for 126 innings, which is even below what we thought it was going to happen. I was thinking like 150. What were your expectations of Ohtani, AJ? What are they now? How do you view him in a points league because of the hitting stuff as well?
He is, for me, because we just don't know. If he was pitching regularly, more so than the once a week, the Sunday Ohtani plant, I would be much higher on him. So I was hesitant because I didn't know that his stats would translate to the big leagues. I was wrong on that. Clearly, every time he takes the mound, there's that, no-hitter potential. He's great. But if he's not going to be used, then for me in a points league, especially if I have a weekly lock and I'm not even sure if he's going to pitch that week, it's really hard for me to rank him all that high. Now throw into the fact that he might not even get the at-bats boost because if they're worried about his blister, they might not let him hit either, and they might just put him on the DL and, say, all right, come back in 10 days and we'll deal with it. So his value as that, two-way player also takes a hit if he's suffering from blisters, as far as I'm concerned. It's hard to gauge.
I agree. Just not pitching enough, and we've also seen him not hit as well of late, so I'm a little bit concerned here. We have a trade. And my first thought when I saw that John Jay was traded to the Diamondbacks had nothing to do with John Jay. I thought this comes 24 hours after we find out that AJ Pollock, another great AJ, of course, his thumb is not recovering as quickly as the Diamondbacks thought it might. I thought now he's going to be out to the All-Star break. This is going to take even longer for AJ Pollock and or Steven Souza to resume. The Arizona clearly needed an outfielder, and John Jay is capable. He hits 300, gets a lot of singles, he can defend. You don't want him in a fantasy league. But my thought here was this is probably not good for those investing in Pollock that want him back anytime soon. Do you have any thoughts on John Jay in a points league? It's a lot of hits. I mean, he should play regularly. He should lead off. Maybe he'll score some runs. Goldschmidt looks better. But, to me this is about Pollock and Souza.
Well, just for John Jay himself, I think moving to Arizona is going to probably, not only with the lineup around him being a little bit better, but a better environment. Not that they've been producing is better, but, I think they're a better offense than Kansas City is. And I think if he's not batting leadoff, perhaps he takes a hit. But I had him just outside my 100 outfielders in points leagues this week. He'll probably move into it just because of the change of scenery and everything there. What I did notice, which stunned me when I actually went to check this out, that if you take the active rostered out, so, Pollock's out of the mix because it's on the DL, Patrick Corbin is the leading hitter on this team in Arizona at 261. Hey, that's insane to me. So I think they would have made this move anyway. I don't necessarily think it is as tied to the fact that AJ and Steven might not be coming back as soon as we hoped. I just think it's the fact that no one on this team is hitting and he might be able to jumpstart this offense. If they were looking to replace Pollock long term, I think they probably would have tried a little bit harder than John Jay.
One would hope. One would definitely hope. I mean, I don't think Pollock's out for the rest of the season. And don't ask about Yasmani Tomas, who last mattered, that was what, 2016 when he had 30 home runs? He's a AAA Reno. And it reminds me of Rusnik Castillo in Boston. The only reason he's still on the roster, still in the organization, is because he makes so much money. He is batting .233 with a .257 on base and .335 slugging in Reno. How's that even possible? Brandon Nimmo would have 30 homers there. All right, moving on now. We have one combo meal, but he's an important guy. Here it is.
Hey, it's a combo meal.
I seem to like Yoan Moncada in my Roto rankings more than you do in points leagues. Are you waiting to see what Moncada does? He seems like a guy who could pile on the homers and the steals, but there's a lot of strikeouts, not a lot of hits. It's going to be like a 240 batting average. Is that what you're scared of with Moncada, or do you like him?
I mean, he's not in my top 100 hitters, but he's just on the outside looking in. I think for me, I have a little more faith in long-term of players just ahead of him. Like, you know, I have Jay Bruce two spots ahead of him, and I just can't believe that Jay Bruce is not going to turn this around, at least somewhat. He's in that ballpark of a Jay Bruce, of a Will Myers, of a Matt Chapman. I like that kind of zone for him in terms of point leagues. He still strikes out too much for my taste, but he's not too far out of the mix here. We're talking a top 100 hitter borderline.
That was Moncada's third combo meal of the season, tying with Trevor Story for the most combo meals by, as Kyle puts it, a regular human this season. Mike Trout has five. If Moncada and Story are regular humans, Kyle, what is Trout? Is he the Terminator? Is he some kind of monster?
I mean, he's well.
There's no book about him
level.
Being a monster,
no.
Even though there is with, you know, Furry and Hermie and all those other
by
guys.
By your definition of Grover being a monster, Mike is then a fish if his last name's Trout.
That's ridiculous. Grover admitted he was a monster. In a book. Books don't lie.
Books
this
never
isn't Twitter.
Lie. Book, yeah, the internet,
oh,
all that
goodness.
Stuff. It's all good stuff.
Oh, my goodness. The monster is in the book. I'm so embarrassed. It was me.
You're a pretty good Grover, AJ. We're going to make this a regular thing.
We've got to clip that for every time we talk about monsters.
I like it.
Anyway, Moncada, I think he could end up with like 18 homers and 18 steals, which to me makes him worth rostering in most leagues.
Oh, I agree with you. Maybe more steals than that, but it's to me the issue is that there's a golden sombrero lurking around every corner, and in leagues, I can't truck with that.
What do we think of points leagues and closers? Here's our carousel.
The closer carousel.
I admit I was a little bit surprised when I looked at your rankings and saw that Kenley Jansen is number 7 overall. Now, points leagues, you rank closers very generously, and you should because, you know, they put up numbers. Do you feel that Jansen is, obviously you feel he's the top reliever again, but to put him at that level, above like Freddie Freeman, above Max Scherzer, even in a points league, I can't go that high. And you have Kimbrel too among closers, and he's 21. So can you explain that?
Yeah, for me, it's part of it is just when you weigh Kenley against the rest of relievers, there's not even a close contest here. Just in terms of the strikeout to walk rate, and you know now we've got the Dodgers actually winning games, so the saves are coming. You could argue that if the Dodgers were going to be a sub 500 team, then okay. But if he's saving as many games, or the Dodgers are winning as many games as they are. I mean, you know, Kenley's a lock for those opportunities. No one else is going to get them. And he's performing now at a level that if it's correct those first 2 weeks, this is kind of what I expected from him. And so from that standpoint, he's just so far and ahead of his peers that scales the rankings for me a lot. Plus, there's just so many pitch counts and pitchers working five innings. The starting pitching just isn't what it used to be. And I would much rather have a reliable closer right now and just lock him in for like 15 points a week. And just, you know, he would be around the number 30 starter based on his workload right now over the past like 15 days. And that to me is very important.
You rank Yuris Familia, the Mets 51 and Aroldis Chapman number 100. What's that about?
It's usage and the fact that I know that my manager is just stubborn as all get out. It's an adjustment period that hasn't really adjusted. Familia tends to come in and give up the runs. Anyone that's inherited, he gives up, but those aren't charged to him. And he's been used in the tail end of the eighth a lot to come in. And been horrible. But if he starts an inning, he tends to do okay. And the Yankees, I just don't see so many opportunities. They are hitting so well, generally speaking, and winning games that I don't necessarily think they need to use him all that much, and that his usage will be down.
Let's talk about some other guys available in a lot of leagues. Shane Green of the Tigers, Canacella of the Rangers. Readily available. I'm saddened by the fact that Fernando Rodney is now rostered in more than half of ESPN leagues, so I can't complain about that very fact. But Green's probably next on my list. I mean, actually, no, he's rostered in 58, so I can't even talk about him in the Thursday block here. But there's plenty of saves available in ESPN standard leagues.
Yeah, there always are. The problem is simply that there aren't enough pitchers that you can reliably count on for them on a weekly basis. So in a points league situation, the ones who you know are going to get them, you know, it's free points. So I would definitely take them, especially since you're slotting them into a spot where you don't want to risk using a starting pitcher. Again, another reason why relief pitchers are so important. What do you make of your guy Sir Anthony? Because I think
he's awesome.
He's looked good from what I've seen, but of course I don't watch the Phillies as much as you do.
I don't know if anyone does. I by the way, as soon as Jason Hayward swung the bat, I switched the channel back to the NBA game. I knew exactly what was going on. And it shouldn't have happened. It should not have happened. Jason Hayward hadn't hit nary a homer off a lefty this year. He's awful against them. Adam Morgan dominates lefties. I actually agree with everything Gabe Kapler did there. Dominguez didn't have it in his second inning. Dominguez is really, really good. But I don't think he's going to be used as a conventional one-inning closer. But he's got to be rostered in more leagues. I think he's going to end up with a lot of saves. But it might look a little like Cody Allen now, because Cody Allen, every save seems to be four or five outs because they have nobody setting him up. I think we might see that. I like Dominguez. I think he should be a lot more popular. And those are the first runs he allowed, and he didn't even allow them. Quickly here, most saves rest of the year. Let's play this little game. Astros, because Rondon got it last night.
Yeah, I mean, I've been bidding for Rondon to be picked up in a lot of leagues. I think he's got a lot of promise. I just don't know how they're going to use their pitchers. And when push comes to shove and things get a little more important and, you know, pennant racy, I think we're going to see Devenski a lot more, quite frankly. I really do. I think that's going to be the guy that's going to end up being trusted more than anyone else. So as strange as it may say, I think this is Devenski's job down the line. But I could be wrong.
Bad teams here. Kyle Bearclaw, the Marlins. Joaquin Soria, the White Sox. Do either get the 20 saves? Do you want either?
I think Bearclaw has the closer stuff. I think he's legit. I think he will get to 20. It will be close because it's a bad team there. But I like him of that batch, yeah.
Let's look at the schedule here for the weekend here. On this show, it's a four-day weekend, which I love. There's a game on ESPN Plus today, but it probably already started by the time you're listening to this. Cardinals, Miles Mikolas. Did you think he would be this? I remember you ranking him really well back in preseason, better than we did, me and Tristan, and thinking, what does he know? You didn't think he'd be this good, did you? I mean, he looks really, really good, keeping runners off base. I mean, the wins, never project.
Yeah, no, I thought he'd be this good. I'm brilliant. No, of course not. I didn't think he'd be this good. But, sometimes you roll the dice on some of these pitchers, and you get lucky more than anything else. There's always one guy. I mean, I was high on Keuchel before he became Dallas Keuchel. There's just certain numbers. I can't even figure it out. You know, I've got these metrics when I'm doing rankings, and I try to take the names off of the backs of the jerseys when I do this. And sometimes the numbers just spit something out that make no sense to me because I don't really know anything about these guys, but I've learned to trust the numbers. And he's someone who it said he was going to be well if given the chance. And hey, here he is.
The Cubs starting pitcher today has already walked two and the game has not started.
Hey now.
ESPN tonight, it's the Red Sox debuting a lefty named Jalen Beeks against another lefty, Matthew Boyd of the Tigers, who we've seen. He's pitched okay. What is your stance here on relying on a rookie pitcher in his first ever big league game, and especially one who's not a top prospect?
It's interesting. I think for me, because he's not a top prospect, that actually bodes well for him. He's also a lefty, and that bodes well. It's a Thursday, and a lot of times teams will give their guys the night off on a Thursday if they're getting ready to travel for a weekend series of three games. So I think you're looking at all those things. If you don't film on the guy, you don't really know what to make of him. Lefties tend to do, I think, better, on their debuts. That's just me being apocryphal, but it just seems to me that lefties, if they're making the big leagues, there's probably some sort of quirk or unusual thing about them that hitters need to adjust to. He could be awful for his career. He could be great for his career. it's just the newness of him, and given all the circumstances, I roll the dice. Why not?
Friday on ESPN Plus at 8:05 p.m. Eastern, it's Justin Verlander night at Texas. Verlander having an amazing season, great numbers. All of us have him ranked really well. You have him 16. I have him right around there. It's amazing what Verlander is doing when he looked not done 2 years ago, but certainly not like to the degree Felix Hernandez has done, but he looked like a 350 ERA guy, and now he looks like he's going to win a Cy Young. It's fun. I'm enjoying this. I don't know about you, but I'm enjoying this.
Of the top guys, I think if there's going to be someone who suffers a setback, it might be him. Certainly run support-wise, all the Houston pitchers, they don't have a lot to worry about.
Saturday on ESPN Plus, you can watch the ghost of Aaron Sanchez. I thought he'd be good. I mean, look, I've been wrong by plenty of pitchers this season. I thought Tyler Chatwood would be fine. He's not. I thought Aaron Sanchez would bounce back. He hasn't. He's still walking everybody. I'm just disappointed. But he's facing Kevin Gausman, the Orioles enigma, who, you know, everybody drafted, and now half of those people have moved on. But you know that there could be a month where Kevin Gausman rips off, you know, an ERA of 170 and wins five starts. He can do that even on this awful Orioles team. That's what's frustrating.
That's him in a nutshell. It was really fun watching the Orioles the last couple of days not score any runs and still sweep the Mets. So
how do you win a game when you don't score any runs? I feel for you because my team's been terrible for 5 years and now they're showing signs, but not really. I don't know. Your Mets are playing at the Yankees. They're hosting the Yankees this weekend. Luis Severino is the pitcher on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball with A-Rod and the whole gang. And, man, we got to start viewing Severino as pretty close to that top tier, don't we? He doesn't have the track record of Sale and Kluber and Scherzer. And Kershaw is different now. He's not a top 10 guy to me. But Severino and Verlander are right there to that top tier. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, every year in the preseason, I do some sort of, I guess you guys like to say dynasty rankings. I like to say dynasty rankings. For me, he was my number six pitcher if you were starting a dynasty league from scratch in the preseason. So I was all in on him. I've seen nothing to dissuade me from that feeling right now. I mean, ride him.
Scherzer also pitches on Sunday at home against the Giants. That should be another double-digit strikeout game. The ESPN Plus game is Brad Keller of the Royals against Sean Manaea, who's did not have a very good May, Mr. Manaea. But to me, the thing I hate most is inconsistency. If Manaea is a four ERA pitcher, then fine. Be consistent about it. Don't throw a no-hitter one day, have a great April, and then get tagged in May, and I don't know what you are. That bothers me more, right? I mean, I just want consistency with these guys.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about when you are doing, especially with all these points leagues that we have now, a lot of people look at the total points for the season or even just the last 15 days to make their waiver wire claims. And you just cannot do that because that does not tell the whole story at all. I think you need to come up with some other metrics, which is why, again, for me, K to BB is huge because that tends to be consistent. Even, you know, strand rate kind of fluctuates and run support and all that stuff. If a guy is going to be a strikeout pitcher and not walk people, that's super, and that means more to me than anything else.
You know what's consistent to me? My love for this product I'm about to read. Hash Browns are brought to you by MeUndies. Take a moment to think about your undies. I know it's a little bit weird, but your first thought probably is not that they are awesome, which is why I want to tell you about MeUndies. They're comfy, awesome undies that'll make you feeling good from the moment you put them on. And when you feel good, anything is possible. MeUndies are made with a material sustainably sourced from beechwood trees. Their naturally soft fiber makes a fabric that won't sag down or ride up. Trust me, once you put on a pair, you will get it. With MeUndies, you can get undies sent right to your door. No more hunting around for the perfect pair at a crowded store and eventually settling for something just good enough. MeUndies is so sure you will love your first pair that if you're not happy, they'll do whatever they can to get you into the right pair. And if they can't, keep them and they'll refund you. So it really is risk-free to try the best underwear ever. Still not sure? MeUndies has a deal for listeners of the Fantasy Focus Baseball. First-time purchasers get 20% off their first pair of MeUndies and free shipping. That's 20% off plus free shipping and a guarantee that you and your MeUndies will be very happy together. Get your butt over to MeUndies.com and treat yourself to get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go to MeUndies.com/FFB. That's MeUndies.com/FFB.
I come from a land MeUndies.
They really are great. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm wearing a pair right now. I don't want to get too personal, but they are fantastic. Kyle, I'm sure we have some hash browns here, because hash browns are fantastic, too. Both the literal kind, you know, like eat breakfast with eggs and bacon, and also the figurative kind that we use here on this show. And Kyle, please tell us what the listeners want answers to.
Sure, we can only offer one kind of hash brown in an audio setting, so we'll get to that. Curdy wants to know, what is Juan Soto doing that isn't sustainable, or is a 19-year-old just this legit and an asset in redraft leagues this season?
Juan Soto, the Washington rookie, who is still not turned 20. That's something he and Kyle have in common. Man, it's a great start for this kid. And what I look at, AJ, is not so much the power. I look at K rates. I look at walk rates. Is the kid overwhelmed? I want to watch him play. He's clearly not the least bit overwhelmed. It's not just bad pitching he hits. He's hitting pretty much everybody. He is not at all an automatic out against lefties. It's a small sample of 20 at-bats, but his OPS is over 1,200. In fact, both his homers, he's a lefty hitter, both his homers are come off lefties. 9 walks, 9 strikeouts. What's unsustainable? I mean, the BABIP is a little high. It's 390. And pitchers eventually figure out all hitters, you know, in time. This looks like a 300 hitter to me with some power.
It's pretty nice, isn't it? The only thing that is unsustainable for me is the Nationals organization's willingness to keep him up here. I think for me, if I ran the zoo, you know, Adam Eaton's coming off the DL on Friday, allegedly, and Michael Taylor's been hitting well of late. I mean, you know, in a perfect world, send Michael Taylor back down and you know, keep Soto. I think Soto's experience has been so good this time around that I would actually just send him down when Eaton comes off the DL and let him have a very positive experience here and call him back up again in 2 weeks. And I think, to me, that would be the best for his development. But I don't know, you know, I don't know that necessarily that him staying would, you know, would be bad for him either. He seems to be good, but for me, that would be my decision.
So it'd be like a better first foray into the majors than, say, Phillies third baseman Mitch Walding, who was promoted a couple weeks ago and went 0 for 6 with 6 strikeouts. So that did not go well.
Yeah, but even Soto did well at the start. Even if the pitchers do start to figure him out and he suddenly hits 250 for the next 10 days, even that could be discouraging for a kid who is so young. I was at my 30th high school reunion this weekend, Eric. My high school reunioning was older than this kid. That's scary.
Man, you are old, AJ.
I am.
I mean, Tristan just turned 29, and you're already at your 30th reunion? How's that even possible?
I saw Yaz play.
With the band or the Red Sox outfielder? Okay.
Indeed.
Kyle, save us.
I'm trying here. Michael wants to know, who would you want the least in a points league that doesn't penalize for strikeouts of these three players? He's got Scope, Peraza, or Cesar Hernandez. Which one do you want least?
What points league doesn't penalize for strikeouts?
I thought that was the idea of points leagues.
That's part of it for me. I don't see any reason to invest in Peraza unless you need every stolen base, which you don't in a points league. But what are your thoughts, AJ?
Yeah, it's almost like this is a roto question, isn't it? Or at least a categories question, because you're not deducting for strikeouts. I mean, there's no reason not to have Scope. With even more valuable, he's pretty valuable now. I mean, I think you nailed it on the head there. It's Peraza.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Peraza fan. He can't hit for average, can't get on base. He can steal a base, but that doesn't matter in a points league. Scope, by the way, is a good buy-low opportunity. I understand Baltimore's a mess, but, man, he hits 30 home runs every year. He hits for a decent average. This is going to improve as the season goes on. It's time to invest in Jonathan Scope. What's next?
Players that can steal bases but don't get on base. The Reds have never done that before, have
Billy
they?
Billy Hamilton, man, what a joke that's become. I mean,
he's not even going to catch the ball in the outfield. Come on, man.
I mean, get on base a little bit. It's awful. I don't know. I'd play Jesse Winker every day and see that 350 on base, but they're not doing it. That's their team, not mine.
Their mistakes, not yours. Lewis and Chris, we got a few questions coming in on Michael Fulmer. He's still rostered in the majority of leagues, but Lewis and Chris both want to give up on him. What do you suggest?
Well, it's certainly not going well, and I sense that his rookie season was about the best we could get out of him. And last season, when didn't the K rate go down last season? I want to make sure I'm right about this. Yeah, the K rate got to a level in 2017 where I was like, man, that's just awful. You can't have a K rate of 6.2. It wasn't good as a rookie, but then it got worse. And I thought, man, this team is just going to go through a total rebuild. He really needs to be somewhere else. Maybe that's motivation. Maybe he's just an average number three or four starter. I mean, he's got 2 wins and 12 starts, mainly because of the team around him. I mean, he could fake his way to more. I don't think he's a top 50 starter anymore.
I see a little bit more potential than that. I mean, yeah, like you said, there's not a lot around him, which is certainly disturbing and troubling there. But if he could just keep the ball in the park, I think he'll be fine. And perhaps that's just a little more velocity on the ball or a little less velocity. I don't know exactly what it is. I haven't watched him exclusively. But to me, that's the only thing that is stopping him from being what he was, is that when he is giving up these fly balls, they're going out of the park. So just get that home run rate down a little bit. I think he'll be serviceable.
What's next?
Matt wants to know what's up with Trey Turner. The OBP is about the same as last season, but the batting average and slugging percentage are way down. Are we looking at just a steals guy, or is there still 5-category upside here?
I have a hard time hearing a complaint about Trey Turner, I got to tell you. I mean, he's on pace for like off the top of my head, 18 homers and 45 steals and 100 runs. I mean, yeah, 258 is a bit of a drag. His on base is actually up from last year because his walk rate is way up. I think it's important that he bats at the top of the lineup. That might end when Adam Eaton comes off the DL, by the way. I have no complaints whatsoever. We all rank Turner as a top 10 guy overall or close to it. I think he's settling into what he is. I don't think he's a guy who's ever going to win a batting title. That 340 as a rookie, no way.
I had Turner as outside of the top 10, but it was close. And I had listed him as like, you know, we had to pick a bust from like the top 10 first two rounds, and I picked him, but that's simply because I think the expectations with him are incredibly too high. For the player he is, that doesn't mean he's a horrible player. And I've actually moved him back into my top 10 in terms of hitters, since, because I do see the upside there, especially with you know, the steals and better eye at the plate. So I understand why people are like saying, this isn't the Turner I wanted. I just think that your expectations were too high and chill.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys to complain about. I mean, let's look at our, you know, top 10s from preseason. I mean, you want to complain? Complain about Paul Goldschmidt, okay, despite his four-hit effort yesterday, or any number of closers or starting pitchers, Aaron Sanchez. But you can't complain about Trey Turner. What's next?
All righty, and the last one comes from Neil. Lance Lynn's got 3 straight quality starts under his belt and a 3.49 career ERA, obviously a little worse this year. He's available in 80% of ESPN leagues. You buying in or not so much?
AJ, my problem with people lumping in all the late pitching signers in late March is that some of them, not all of them, have been bad. I mean, Jake Arrieta, his K rate's down, but he, until his last outing, was pitching fine. Lance Lynn looks like the guy now that we thought he would be. It just took him a lot longer to get to that point. Like, his first 8 outings were just horrific. But his last couple outings, they were against Cleveland, Kansas City, and Detroit. But that's his division, so he's going to keep facing him. The problem I have with Lance Lynn is he walked 5 in his last outing. He's not going to be able to have success doing that. So unless he starts to find better command consistently, I will not invest in Lance Lynn.
Right, and he's not really throwing a lot of strikes either. So he's gotten fortunate with some of the opponents, certainly, and he has gotten fortunate that all those runs didn't score. People look at the hits sometimes and go, oh, well, he only allowed 2 hits. His last start, what a great outing. It's still 7 base runners, so it's a lot to, actually 8, he actually hit a guy too now that I'm looking at it. So there's going to be a long, long time before I'm going to start recommending that Lance Lynn get above the 50% threshold there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have the article today on free agents to pick up, and I can't imagine Lance Lynn is going to be one of them. I don't even know what his rostership is.
18.2%.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be other pitchers. I don't know about Mike Leake, who's on the most added list. I can't go there. Clay Buchholz, as a staff, we've never been so unilateral in our disagreeing picking him up. That was a great question, Leo. I actually thought it was worth asking Clay Buchholz earlier in the week because, you know, like he's pitching well, and he pitched again well last night. But no, I almost out of principle. Like, what does he need to do? Throw a no-hitter? Give us another month? I don't know what it is, but we're not there yet. Man, I don't see a lot of pitchers.
The thing. At some point, you expect the inconsistency to come because it's just always come for him. It's just he's always given you something that draws you in, and then it all goes away. It's just that's the way his entire career has been.
Yeah, it's been a little bit annoying. I mean, he's pitched well in the past, but I know. And there won't be Mike Leake either. I guess Vince Velasquez, who by the time you're listening, could have gotten pounded today on his 26th birthday. Do you want to pitch on your birthday? Is that a thing you want? Like, you're going to have a great birthday, all right? Hopefully. Do you want to pitch on that day? Because there's downside if you give up 5 runs in the first 2 innings, too. And I don't know if I want to take that chance. How do we all feel about this?
Heaney had a big birthday performance the other day, and Rendon had like 4 hits last night on his birthday.
Yeah, I mean, Heaney threw a one-hitter.
Yeah, how about it? So maybe it's like a steroid, but a legal one.
I know, back in my daily fantasy days, I know that they always looked for NBA players who had like a birthday or were playing a former team or something, because there's just this like sports psychology thing that people can talk themselves into. I'm not sure that there's any actual correlation there, but it's fun.
I just want to be able to release a posthumous album on my birthday someday.
A posthumous album? What? What do you say?
It's Prince's birthday. It's Prince's birthday. And he's releasing an album today.
according to Kyle, on this date, Dwight Gooden, drafted by the Mets in 82. And Steve Chilcott.
Good time.
In 1966. Head of Reggie Jackson. How about that? Any other thoughts here, gentlemen? Today's National Chocolate Ice Cream Day, which every day, right? I mean, like, you're going to eat ice cream every day. Say you're thinking about, like, all right, what am I going to do today? And you see that it's National Chocolate Ice Cream Day. Are you going to, like, actually go out and get some, you know, at a store or, you know, at a place, you know, a business? You're actually going to just eat chocolate ice cream today when you ordinarily would not have just because it's National Day? I'm curious. Is that really something you would do?
Is it free, Eric? Are they giving me some sort of bargain because it is National Chocolate Ice Cream Day? Because otherwise, you know me. You've worked with me for a long time.
Yeah, you're not driving 10 miles to Baskin-Robbins to get your free chocolate ice cream. I know you.
No, I might, but if I am, if it's not free and it's just chocolate ice cream day, I'm going in and I'm going to be contrarian and get vanilla.
Fade the public.
That's a good point.
Now, I might not celebrate this one, but on Sunday, you bet your bottom dollar that I'm going to go out and get a ballpoint pen.
Oh, come on. That's a day?
Yes.
On his vacation. He goes shopping for writing implements.
Yeah, that's my change of plans. I'm just going to tour the Northeast for the finest in writing utensils.
You better tweet that out. I want to see you in a ballpoint pen on Sunday.
I have an Apple pen.
Well, I think we've done enough damage. Thank you so much for listening to our Thursday show, the first Thursday show of June. And they're all going to keep getting better after this. So really stick with the Fantasy Focus Baseball for this long summer. I know football's coming around soon. And NBA is about to end, probably tomorrow. But, you know, keep with Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's fun. You'll hear a lot more of AJ as the summer goes on as well. AJ probably doesn't know it, but we're all taking vacations. Thank you so much. I know, right? Leo, we'll talk to you in what, September? Thanks, everybody, for listening to our show. And please have an awesome and safe weekend. Everything is
awesome.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.